everybody, and welcome back to Supernatural Podcast. This is a recap of episode number 119 called Provenances. So a brief overview of the episode is that a young couple is murdered in their home shortly after buying an antique painting of a family portrait circa 1910. Upon reviewing the painting's provenance, Sam and Dean learn that everyone who has ever bought the painting has been murdered and race to discover how the portrait is causing the deaths before it can claim its next victim. So, this was an interesting episode. It didn't really progress the storyline so much as another individual episode, but I thought it was slightly creepy and pretty good. So here's my detailed episode recap for you. The show opens with a young couple hanging a picture after the purchase of said picture at an auction that day. We see the man in the picture turn his head. The man who purchased the picture locks the doors and sets the alarm, and we see the picture again, but this time the table is empty. There used to be a straight razor on the table. The man's wife goes to bed and is killed. So the man enters the bedroom, and of course there are no lights on. And he puts his hand in something, and he turns on the light, sees it's blood, looks over, and sees that his wife is killed, and he is subsequently killed. So then we see Dean and Sam at a bar, and Dean is pretending to be a reality TV scout and is picking up women. Sam is at a table doing research. And he tells Dean that about a killing in New York and how the doors are locked from the inside. According to their dad's journal, there had been a string of murders in upstate New York that followed the same pattern, with a long time frame between each murder. So we see the next scene that Dean's asleep in the car. It's the next morning, and he's snoring and hungover, and Sam honks the horn and scares him. Sam tells him that the house is clean, has no supernatural history at all, and that all the stuff has gone to auction. Well, apparently the family is not nostalgic, and the two boys go to the auction house wearing casual clothes, and Dean asks a man who he thinks is a waiter for champagne. Turns out to be the owner of the auction house named Daniel Blake. Mr. Blake tells them that they are not on the list, and Dean says, "We're there, Chuckles, check your list again." Dean stuffs his mouth with little mini quiches, and we see that the man in the portrait is looking off to the left again. We meet Sarah Blake, who is the daughter of the owner of the auction house, an attractive girl about the same age as Sam and Dean, and then they leave, because apparently they're not welcome. Sam makes a comment about knowing things about art because he took an art class to meet girls, and then they go back to their hotel room, which... oh my, was that an interesting hotel room. It was black and white, sort of psychedelic. It had a white padded headboard on the bed and animal print bed sheets. The wall had sort of a strange pattern. Everything was in black and white, and it looked a little bizarre. So then we see Sam and Sarah go out on a date. And Sarah's wearing a lot of lip gloss, and her teeth are a little too perfect. But there's not a lot of chemistry between them. However, I think they connect on a level because they both have unexpected deaths in their family. Of course, with Sam, we know it's his mom and Jessica, and with Sarah, her mother died about a year ago, and it was very unexpected. So the next scene we see is that Dean is sharpening his knife, and Sam is telling Dean about the provenances, which the history of the painting, and that all the people who previously owned the painting were murdered. The man in the painting is Isaiah Merchant and his family, and it was painted in 1910. And then we see Sam and Dean scale a fence to go to the auction house to see the painting again, and they cut the alarm and break in. They tear out the picture and they burn it outside, and in the empty frame, a picture reappears as the other one burns, magically replaces itself. The next morning, Dean says he can't find his wallet, that he lost it at the warehouse, and it has his prints and his fake ID in it, and they have to go back and get it. Well, they go back, and they find Sarah there, and Dean smiles and opens his wallet, takes out a $20 bill, and says, Here's the $20 I owe you, Sam. And he makes some excuse and exits awkwardly. As Sarah and Sam are standing there talking, Sam sees the painting go by and he shouts out, "Oh my God! Oh, that painting looks so good!" And he covers for his obvious lack of ability to keep it together and not make a scene. And Sarah kind of looks at him strangely. She's like, "Do you want to buy it?" And he says, "Oh God, no." I thought that was an interesting comment. He tells them to make sure that they don't sell it and that he'll give her a call. And so apparently the subject is haunting the painting. They go to the library and they find out that the family was murdered in 1914 by Isaiah Merchant when his wife threatened to take their two boys and adopted daughter away. Isaiah ruled with an iron fist, and he was a barber who used a straight razor. And Isaiah is looking forward in the picture that they find in the newspaper. Apparently, the painting has changed its own things that are actually in the painting throughout time. And what does this mean? Sam makes a comment. It's like a Da Vinci Code thing. And Dean says, "Oh, I don't know. I'm waiting for the movie." And they discuss what this could mean. I was very distracted by this because Sam's shirt was clashing with the background wallpaper in this hotel room and just drove me crazy. But it is a good scene because Dean finally confronts Sam about Jessica and saying that Sarah's good for him. And they have this moment for the first time that he's actually able to talk about Jessica. And Sarah fi they find out from Sarah that they have actually sold the painting, so they go to the woman's house. And there's a shot of an older woman in her house taking off her glasses and drinking tea, and you see the reflection of the straight razor in the glasses. And of course, the woman's killed. So Dean and Sam and Sarah all go to the woman's house, whose name is Evelyn, and they find her dead, of course. Isaiah has turned back to look ahead again, and Sarah panics, and they go back to the hotel room. Sarah tells them that she lied to the police, saying that she was alone when she found Evelyn. She says that she's going with them to go figure out what's going on, and she's not going to run and hide. And Dean looks at Sam and says, "Sam, marry that girl." So they notice that the razor is in a different location in the picture when they're actually in the house and looking at it. And they see that there's a painting in the painting that's different, and it when they use a magnifying glass, they see that it's a mausoleum with the family name on the front. So they go around to different graveyards and find the mausoleum. Inside, they find that there are five graves, but four urns. Mounted on the wall above the urns, each person has items that associate with their life built into this glass sort of case in the wall. But the big question is, where's the fifth urn? So, Sarah talks to Sam, and they kind of make this comment about how that there's something going on between them. But Sam says it's not a good idea because every time people get close to him, they get hurt. And he tells her about Jess and his mom, says he is cursed. Dean interrupts. He'd been in the police station trying to figure out what was going on with Isaiah Merchant, and he came out and said that Isaiah was buried because his family was ashamed of him and the murders, and he wasn't allowed to be cremated and placed in the family mausoleum. So, fortunately for them, they can go and dig him up and light his bones on fire. And they go back to the house. It's dark out now to check on the painting and see what's going on. And Dean stays out in the car and leaves the car running. He turns on some music, but Sam says turn it off. And they go in, Sam and Sarah go in, and they notice that the girl and the razor are not in the picture. And they hear some laughing. The door locks behind them, and they can't open it up on either side. So the two boys use their cell phones and talk through the door. Dean tries to come up with an idea on his side. In the meantime, Sam looks around the house for salt and iron, knows that the old woman who lived there doesn't use salt, so they can't find any. But it gets really windy, And we see this girl come through. She looked a lot like the girl from The Ring, dragging her doll and carrying the razor in the other hand. Sam finds a stick of iron that was used for a fireplace, and he hits the girl with the iron. It dissipates her for a bit. Sarah makes a comment that dolls in the olden days used the hair of the child and made him as an exact image of the child. And they remember back in the mausoleum that the doll was actually in the case, and Dean rushes back to the mausoleum to destroy the doll. Meanwhile, the girl reappears and pushes a big chest into Sam, pinning him against the wall. And Dean has a hard time getting the doll out of the case. He finally shoots it with his gun and then starts to burn the doll. Sam is able to push his way out from behind the case or the dresser and protect Sarah. At the same time, the girl explodes in fire and the painting is returned to its original status. So, after all this is said and done, we find out the history of the little girl. Her family had been murdered with their throats slashed, and the girl was readopted into the merchant family and killed her family. It wasn't Isaiah that killed him, it was the girl. But the dad took the blame, and once they were all dead, he watched over the girl in the painting. Sam says that some people die tortured, and their spirits are just as dark. And so Dean goes to wait in the car while Sam and Sarah say their goodbyes. And it's very heartbreaking to watch them. They, want to be together. But Sam leaves, or he's about to leave, and Sarah says that there's a lesson to be learned in which they got through in one piece, that maybe Sam isn't cursed, and maybe he'll come back and see her. And he leaves, and you see Sarah lean against the door for a moment, and then there's a knock on the door, and she opens. And Sam grabs her and kisses her. And you see Dean smile and say, "That's my boy," and then he gets in the car. And that was the end of the episode. Okay, so like I said, overall I thought it was a pretty good episode. I would have to give it maybe a 3 out of 5, pretty average for in comparison to some of the others. Obviously, some I liked more, and definitely the Bugs episode I liked a lot less. But it was right in the middle, and I thought it was pretty well done. I thought it was interesting because you ever see one of those old creepy paintings in which it looks like the person's eyes follow you wherever you are in the room? I've had that happen on a few occasions, or even it looks like it moves. It's kind of bizarre. And this episode really played out on those fears. And so I only really have a few comments tonight. Okay, first of all, what the heck was up with the hotel room? I don't know what purpose it possibly could have served. I mean, we've seen all these normal-looking, sort of rundown hotel rooms the whole time, and yet here we are in this sort of, bad Las Vegas room. It just seemed really out of place for being a small town in New York, and I'm not really sure, again, what purpose it served. Now, I really like Sarah, but there wasn't a lot of chemistry between the two actors, or their characters for that matter, and I think they have a lot in common. I think they could be really good for each other, and I hope to see her in future episodes. But I think they need to work on writing that character a little bit better because it just didn't seem very realistic. Okay, the next thing I thought were kind of weird was they have suits. We saw them wear suits when they were priests back a few episodes. So they could have spent a few minutes changing and then go to the auction house, so they wouldn't have stood out so much. It was definitely a black tie, formal little mini quiches and champagne sort of thing. And that just seemed a little weird. On the same note, Dean seemed a little rude when they were at the auction. It was as if he was completely classless. I mean, he just stuffed his mouth full of mini quiches and demanded champagne, and it just seemed a little strange. Even, they try to blend in, but this, they obviously weren't even trying. Well, Sam was a little bit. Okay, so when they scaled the wall and broke into the auction house to steal the painting, it seemed as if they were almost professional burglars. Now, I know they have a lot of practice at this, but they made it look really, really easy, sort of an Ocean's 11 sort of easy. And it, I don't know, it just looked a little weird to me. There wasn't any mention of Sam's telekinesis. When we saw him get pinned before and Dean was in obvious trouble, he was able to get himself out and go rescue. But here, I mean, I don't know. I know he probably needs to work on it and develop his ability, but he was in danger, and this was definitely a time that he could have used his telekinesis. And they didn't even talk about it and say, oh, I tried to use it, or I don't know. I think that was just something they could have played up a little bit more, because it seems to work in times of crisis, but, and this was definitely one of those, but it just didn't work. Sam's comment about having taken an art history class to meet girls seemed really beyond his character. I know it was sort of a funny moment, but that's really not who he is to go out and meet a bunch of girls. Like, he's sort of a, you know, one guy, one girl sort of person. And that just seemed really out of his character. Although maybe he was pretty wild in his early college days, I don't know. Okay, the couple we see at the very beginning, the first people we see get killed, the woman was walking back to her bedroom with a candle. Wasn't even on in any sort of holder. It was just her carrying a lit candle and using that for light. I don't know. I don't know who walks around the house with a candle. It seemed a little strange. That just kind of stood out in my mind. Let's see. I liked the use that they had of talking about the doll and the like image of the child and the use of hair and all of that stuff, because back in Edwardian and Victorian time, I know they used hair as a way of remembering somebody who'd been killed or died. They would weave it into jewelry. They would put in a picture and frame it on the wall. With children, they would put it on a doll. It really was a way of remembering those who had died in their family. And just in the way that they used to take pictures of dead family members to remember them, either, you know, at the very end of their life or after they had died. I thought that was a really neat, interesting tie-in, especially since we were talking about a picture from 1912 and 1914. So that was pretty cool. And I thought there was a little heavy-handedness on foreshadowing, especially at the end where you see the car and Dean is in there waiting with the engine on and he turns up the music and you just know something's going to happen. He's not going to be able to hear it. And then they go in the house and you see the girl drag the doll and you know how it's all going to end. It just kind of hits you. You know what's going to happen. There's really no big surprise, although I didn't see the little girl. I don't know. I didn't really imagine all the way out to the end, but I hadn't imagined it would be the little girl that was the killer. So it was just kind of heavy on the foreshadowing. But overall, very good. And so that wraps up this episode. I looked at the WB website, and here's a description of next week's episode, which also looks really good. Finally, I think we're going to move the plot along. It's not going to be an individual episode. It's called Dead Man's Blood. And here's the description as it's written on the WB website. After Daniel Elkins, a vampire hunter, guest star Terrence Kelly, and John's mentor is murdered, Sam and Dean are surprised when John himself shows up to solve the case. John discovers the vampires have taken an antique gun, which has the power to kill all supernatural beings. The Winchester family sets out to retrieve the gun from the vampire so they can use it to kill the demon that took Sam and Dean's mother. So, that's cool. Vampires are neat, and I think this might be a really cool episode. I have a couple other random things to talk about. I know we're all kind of wondering what's going to happen next year when UPN and the WB merge, and what are they going to keep, what aren't they going to keep, and there's still a lot of speculation right now, and the fate of many shows is really unclear. However, in a recent press release from the two companies, they stated the following shows will remain on CW: America's Next Top Model and the WB's Beauty and the Geek, to hit dramas like the WB's Smallville, Gilmore Girls, Supernatural, and UPN's Veronica Mars, as well as UPN's hit comedies Everybody Hates Chris and Girlfriends, and the WB's hit comedy Reba. In addition, the WWE's SmackDown, which has been a mainstay at UPN, is expected to play a role in the schedule. So I think that's pretty cool. And I found another article by Bill Carter of the New York Times. This one was dated April 13th. It's called New Shows Readied as Networks Plan for Fall. Now this episode has a little bit to do with the new CW, but also a variety of other networks, and thought it might be interesting if you watch other shows and you're kind of wondering what's going on. So I'm just going to read this for you. The primetime lineups of network television shows are like any other species. They need new generations to come along constantly or they face extinction. With just 1 month to go before the so-called upfronts, the announcements in New York to advertisers of their new schedules, which will include the ritual designation of which shows will survive, the network programmers are poring over the results for the new shows this season. The networks have already ordered renewals on series like Prison Break on Fox, Criminal Minds on CBS, and My Name is Earl on NBC. None of these new entries were quite the monster hits that ABC enjoyed the season before with Desperate Housewives and Lost, but all were safely in hit territory. ABC has again had the highest rated of the new shows series, or new series introduced this season with its reality hit Dancing with the Stars. That is certain to come back, although it is not guaranteed to be next fall. Overall, the network with the widest success was CBS, which may be able to bring back 5 or 6 new shows, a sterling performance in a business where failure remains a dominant outcome for new series. Beyond Criminal Minds, CBS has also confirmed it will return the drama Ghost Whisper, as well as the comedy How I Met Your Mother. CBS also seems highly likely to renew both the mid-season drama The Unit and Julia Louis-Dreyfus's comedy The New Adventures of Old Christine. The other network with the fewest concerns is Fox, which at 15 hours a week has fewer hours to fill than its other three competitors, all of which program 22 hours. American Idol is such a juggernaut these days, and Fox has added so many more hours of that series this season that the network's programmers could whistle past any graveyard of failed shows. But Fox has added a couple of useful new pieces, including Prison Break, and another drama hit is already renewed, Bones. For a network that has enjoyed more spectacular success over the last 2 seasons than any other, ABC is facing an unusual degree of certainty. A third drama introduced a year ago, Grey's Anatomy, exploded this season into a monster hit, but the new scripted series ABC initiated this season included no instant successes. ABC has had great hopes for Commander-in-Chief, which opened the season to hit-level ratings, but the show has fallen off almost every week since, has lost 2 executive producers, and has been off the air for several months. Beyond the dancing series, ABC's only other significant new entry has been another reality series, American Inventor. ABC may need a few more weeks to be certain that show is for real. Most of ABC's comedies have all but vaporized by having to compete against Idol, but one new addition, Freddy, may have done enough to win a renewal. NBC would surely trade places with ABC because it has none of the mega hits ABC now owns. But NBC may still have fewer holes to fill in the fall because of the addition of NFL football on Sunday night. That will not only take care of 3 hours of programming, but will also free up 2 dramas, Law & Order Criminal Intent and Crossing Jordan, to move. That will help because NBC did not replenish its diminishing store of hits after a long roster of replacements this season. My Name is Earl was a gratifying hit and became the most successful new comedy in several seasons. And NBC finally started to build some ratings for the much-admired Office in its second season. But NBC's only true new hit this season has been the game show Deal or No Deal. Unfortunately for NBC, the network has needed to run the show 3 times a week, which may be diluting its popularity. It will be back, of course. None of NBC's other new entries offered much help to the struggling network. Conviction, the new drama from Dick Wolf of Law & Order fame, may still have an outside chance to stay alive, but little else does. That leaves the newly configured CW network, which will have an unusual number of existing shows to choose from, thanks to the combination of the two mini-networks. That will mean fewer opportunities for this series, or this year's new series, though one, the UPN comedy Everybody Hates Chris, is almost surely coming back. The best prospect among the new crop at WB is the drama Supernatural. The one wild card in the planning for every network is the list of programs set to start up this summer. Reality hits have emerged almost every summer in the past 6 years, and the networks are fervently hoping to find one or two more, ones that could return during the regular season, perhaps bumping off a few of the frail survivors from this season. And that's the end of the article. I'll post the show notes, the link in the show notes on the website. And that will wrap up our discussion of this week's episode. I think it will be really interesting to see what happens the next few weeks when all the networks definitely make their decisions. Love that they mentioned Supernatural because it really does, it has quite a following. There are a lot of great websites out there. I've been kind of reading what's going on and what other people are thinking. And it's really keeping up well with Smallville. So it's keeping about 90% of its audience of Smallville is watching Supernatural. So the pairing of those two has been really good, and the ratings are staying pretty similar. I don't know what else to say. I think it has a good chance of getting picked up for the second season, and of course we'd all love that. And I'll talk to you next week when I have a recap of episode number 120. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you soon. You can send me an email at supernaturalpodcast@gmail.com, and of course check out my website, supernaturalpodcast.blogspot.com. And please note that the opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the host and not of the WB or the producers of Supernatural.